we return from, I call to order this 1,344th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. We have before us a report from the executive session. During the executive session, we discussed the matter of the contract of the general manager. And we have a report from that session, which I'm now able to give. We believe, a majority of the Board of Directors believes, that this region deserves the finest leader in public transportation, and that we have the finest leader in John Cato. I think you can tell a great deal from a person as to when they, as to how they handle themselves during adversity. And when John Cato came here 2.5 years ago, Metro WMATA leadership was most definitely in flux and unstable. He was the fourth general manager in a little more than a year. At this moment, and in moments more recently, this general manager has held the agency together. He set the example for leadership when the agency provided outstanding service during the presidential inauguration in January. That day, Metro Rail operated rush hour service for 17 hours straight, and combined Metrobus and Metro Access provided 1.5 million trips on the most historic event in recent history in the District of Columbia. The inauguration service showed that John Cato can lead the organization in good times, and there is nobody that I would rather have lead this organization through these most difficult times. He became only the second general manager in Metro WMATA history to be selected by the American Public Transportation Association as the general manager of the year, and that happened this year. The last time Metro WMATA won that award was 20 years ago. Every day he has proven that he is deserving of that honor. I find John Cato to be absolutely masterful in representing and navigating all of these waters that he finds himself in. We have benefited from calm, seasoned, skilled leadership which knows the District of Columbia. I'd like to point out that John's father, if I'm not mistaken, for 38 years drove a taxicab in the District of Columbia. Here is somebody who has been, who has grown up here and has his roots here. We have been operating under the worst of circumstances. 90 plus days have passed since the great tragedy of June 22nd, and we still do not know from the National Transportation Safety Board the probable cause of that accident. We have had other great problems inflicted upon us. The breakout of suicides since June 22nd is an obvious and prominent example. We've had other challenges. We have lost people from our own workforce under tragic circumstances. This is a time, in my opinion, to reassure our stakeholders and our riders with continued stable leadership, recognizing that there has been some negative public reaction, much of which is related to the fact that we have wisely maintained manual operation in our rail system. Automated train operations are not possible as long as we do not know the probable cause of the June 22nd accident. It would be foolhardy, even though it might provide some immediate relief, to move to an ATO system. We very much appreciate every single day the extended patience and understanding that we are receiving from our riders during this difficult period. John Cato, in my opinion, is a critical element in Metro WMATA finding the solutions to the problems that we are now facing. We need his steady hand at the wheel. And for that reason, I move the resolution to extend the contract of Mr. Cato. Before accepting discussion from my colleagues, let me mention what the contract provides. The board and the general manager are entering into a new contract for an additional 3 years. The current contract expires on January the 29th, 2010. The new contract will take effect on January the 30th, 2010. The important changes to the contract terms are as follows, or no changes to the contract terms. First, his annual salary will remain the same. The annual salary of $315,000 per year will remain stable. Mr. Cato will receive a $27,000 a year non-qualified annuity for life, starting upon his retirement, with 50% of that annuity vesting at the end of the first year of the contract, and an additional 25% vesting at the end of the second and third years. That is change number one. Change number two is that he will receive a $6,000 per year executive, medical, and wellness expense not otherwise covered by the health insurance. Mr. Cato's existing contract will be amended to provide this benefit for 2009. So as I have done, I will move the passage of the resolution which both amends Mr. Cato's current contract and authorizes the execution of a proposed new contract, which is to be effective January 30, 2010. Discussion, Mr. Benjamin.
Mr. Chairman.
Oops, and it's been seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Mr. Benjamin.
I was about to second it.
Okay.
That's fine. It gives me great pleasure to have this opportunity to vote for this resolution and for this continuing contract. I've worked in the transit industry for more than 30 years. I know many of the people in the transit industry and certainly almost all of its leaders. And there is nobody out there that would be a better leader than the one we have today. And I look forward to working with Mr. Cato for the next 3 years.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Ms. Hewlett, or Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is my honor to vote for this motion. I think Mr. Cato epitomizes stellar leadership. These have been very difficult times, as you have stated. And every single time, Mr. Cato has risen to the occasion. Every single time. He is the personification of a stand-up guy. Never runs and hides. Always present. Always there to communicate to our customers that he cares about. To communicate with our WMATA family and employees that he so cares about. And all the people in this jurisdiction. He's always present, and I think it is our good fortune to have him at WMATA, and I look forward to working with him for another 3 years.
Thank you. Mrs. Hutchins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I have it. There we go.
No.
There we go. Yes, it's on for the right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It is new. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to join this board in seconding the motion to extend the general manager's contract. Many are going to talk about the performance of the general manager in doing the work of this agency. I'd like to speak to it on his relationship building. I think it's very critical about it. First of all, Mr. Cato has been an exceptional one in reaching out to the stakeholders, the customers, and most important, building the jurisdictional relationship that is critical in running the agency around this region. I want to give an anecdote. After years on this board, this year was the second time that the general manager came to the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. We had not had a regular appearance before the Transportation Commission by the general manager before. And as Mr. Cato gave an update on the agency's operations and the challenges that we were facing, we had nothing but compliments from those jurisdictional leaders that don't have the opportunity to have the interface that we have. If I could paraphrase the chairman of the Board of Supervisors in Fairfax County, she said, it gives me a great deal of comfort when I hear the voice of the general manager in public and in private settings. And I think that is what this contract addition means to us, that he has restored the confidence in this agency over the past 2 years. He has tried to move us forward with those critical things that make this a great agency, such as concentrating on safety, concentrating on customer relationships, being available for all of our customers, no matter whether they are of means or not. And it is that kind of operation that I think that we need a general manager of his stature to be a part of the leadership to ensure not only our jurisdictions, but the region for this organization. So I'm pleased to second the motion.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hutchins. Mr. Zimmerman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to associate myself with the remarks of our chairman and my colleagues who've spoken, and simply add that when we first retained Mr. Cato for this agency, almost 3 years ago now, I was convinced by everything I learned in that process and by what I'd heard from people in the industry around the country that we had acquired the best person in the country for this job. Earlier this year, in January, we had what was perhaps the finest day in Metro's history, and I was convinced then that we were correct and had, in fact, hired the best person that this agency could have. And then about 6 months later, we had what is probably the worst day in Metro history. And I have to say that in the aftermath of that, I am more than ever strengthened in my conviction that we have the best person that we could have in this job. Seeing how somebody can operate under the best of circumstances is one thing. Meeting big challenges is you know, just part of the job routinely. But there are things that are going to happen that aren't predictable, that aren't necessarily controllable, and it would seem at this point still not even explainable. And that's a real test. And nothing's going to be perfect. Anybody in that position is going to be a human being, and they're not going to be perfect. But I think we're fortunate in who we have, and I believe that our agency will do better in the future and will weather the current storm better for the person that we are fortunate to have in that position. And so I am happy to support the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Mr. Linton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Similar to Mr. Benjamin, I've been in this industry for a number of years. I was a Federal Transit Administrator, and as a result of that, was responsible for 512 agencies around the country for almost 7 years. So I had a chance and to continually see general managers come and go all across the country. I also was engaged in some discussions at the point where we were seeking a new general manager and got some of the same comments and feedback that Mr. Zimmerman received from those around the industry. Dr. Martin Luther King once said that the real measure of a man is not where he stands at the time of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at the time of challenge and controversy. It could be very easy to walk away and take the easy road. And there are many who have said, you know, that at this point in time, the naysayers and those who could easily just throw stones and say that we should dispense of this. And as a board, we could listen to that. We can listen to the noise that's going on and very easily protect ourselves from that noise and make the wrong decision. But I'd like to say that having dealt with 512 boards from around the country, many of whom I know would have taken the easy road, would have looked for an opportunity under all of the difficulties that we face as a board to put the blame on someone that they could in fact say, you take the hit. Let me commend the board for making the right decision, for all that has been said by everybody here today. That we know this is the right decision. We have confidence in our general manager, and we measure him by his performance, not by the noise, not by things that have happened on his watch, but by his performance. In that regard, we are very comfortable in the decision that we've made today, and I stand here well to say that I'm also ready to support this resolution as it goes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Mayor Yule.
I too want to associate myself with the comments already expressed, and I've been involved in my lifetime, my work career, hiring school superintendents, city managers, and other key department management level folks, and certainly during my tenure, I think I'm the third senior member on the WMATA board, certainly involved in the process of hiring and recruiting general managers for Metro. I have found Mr. Cato to be not only very bright, articulate, but certainly someone with passion and commitment to this system. Met with him recently. We had conversation, and I told him that he has my full support. Appreciate everything that he's done and will continue to do for this system, despite the challenges, despite what others are saying, may say, and will continue to say. But the fact remains is that we're the members of this board are his bosses, and we're the ones that, in terms of evaluating his performance, that's really what matters. And so I'm proud to support what's before us today in terms of extending the contract. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Mr. Solomon.
Thank you. I, too, want to join in my colleagues' support for Mr. Cato. The general manager of WMATA is a very stressful job. I've heard my colleagues, some of them, and many people in the area, politicians and just regular citizens, describe the job as living in a fishbowl. Ms. Cato, you've handled this job very, very admirably throughout your career here, and especially within the last 3 months. I can understand that the stress has been very severe, but you don't show it. You seem to stand up there, and even when the pressure's on, you can handle all of the questions. You're always professional. You seem to have always had the highest character, and everyone that I've talked to back in my jurisdiction are extremely pleased with your work performance. And I'm so happy, and I express their support for you and my own in terms of you agreeing to stay here with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solomon. Is there further discussion? Further discussion. Let me explain that on this particular vote, as in all board votes in the Board of Directors, there are 6 voting members, 2 members from each of the principal jurisdictions, 2 voting members from Maryland, 2 voting members from Virginia, and 2 voting members from the District of Columbia. And so all those in favor of approving the resolution and entering into the new contract with Mr. Cato, would you please raise your right hand? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Are any opposed? 1. So by a vote of 5-1, this contract is approved and the resolution is adopted. Mr. Cato, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and I'd like to thank the Board of Directors for your support and confidence in me and the staff here at WMATA. The action that you have taken in renewing this contract is not just about me. It's about the support that you're demonstrating about changing the direction of this agency. It's about the support that you have for the staff of this organization as they carry out their duties in providing transit services to this region. The last few months have been very difficult and very challenging for all of us. It's been an incredible challenge for this region. However, during this difficult period, our employees have continued to work and to work hard and providing the services that our riders in this region expect of us. As I talk to people at various events, one thing is clear. Metro is an essential lifeline in this region and one that really binds the region together. They understand our challenges. Our mission will continue to focus on safety and to provide safe and reliable services. Important issues are ahead of us. We must continue to work on safety, capital, rehab, our budget, and other issues that we are going to be confronted with fewer resources. My staff and I realize the challenges of our funding partners and the need for us to manage within those limitations. I also want to thank my leadership team for their support and their hard work and dedication to this organization and for the services that we operate. But I assure you, our riders and our stakeholders in this region, that I am committed to doing the best that I possibly can, that I am committed to focusing this agency on the quality of service and the reliability and the safety of services, And I want to let our employees know that we are still and we will always be committed to providing a safe environment to the best of our abilities. And we will continue to focus on the mission to be the best ride within the nation. So, Mr. Chair and members of the board, thank you for your support.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cato, and we look forward to your continued service with Metro Ramada. That will also suffice as my chairman's report. We do have appointments to the Riders Advisory Council, which is a second resolution, which I will move. There are two vacant seats from the state of Maryland, and we have a resolution which would appoint Ron Whiting and Victoria Wilder to the Riders Advisory Commission, Riders Advisory Council, representing the state of Maryland to fill terms. I just wanted to get through my report, and then. To fill terms which are both set to expire in December 2009. I move the resolution. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And those members are confirmed to the Riders Advisory Council. At this point, I'm going to excuse myself for pressing business at the Council of the District of Columbia. I'm going to ask Mr. Benjamin to chair the balance of the meeting. Congratulations, Mr. Cato.
We have now reached the public comment period. First person who has signed up to comment is Nicole Miller. Wait a minute. Ms. Miller, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Greetings, everybody. I've been asked by the Fairfax Area Disability Services Transportation Committee to talk with you about the AFTA study. It's actually a peer review that would, well, about WMATA's response to the AFTA peer review that would, well, it's been said that it recommends that WMATA decide to scale back the Metro Access program to the ADA requirements. This AFTA study was created to assess the sustainability of the Metro Access program. The FADSB would strongly encourage WMATA to seek alternative methods to ensure sustainability of the Metro Access program and possible growth of said program. We are aware that WMATA has made valiant efforts to go above and beyond the requirements of the ADA for a transit system. And the FADSB intends to submit a letter to Supervisor Hudgens and I believe Mr. McKay about our stance on the matter and possible alternatives to bridge the funding gap that Metro has found and the possibility that the program is a huge drain on the services. We also are aware that the general manager is required to submit his plans to address this budget gap in December, and that town hall meetings will be held before this time. And I'm here to also ask you to make the announcements for these town hall meetings very prolific. And timely. It is important that the public be made aware of what is at stake and at least get their views explained to Metro so that Metro can at least understand how the public feels about their plans to address this budget shortfall. This summer, Metro Access has celebrated its 15th anniversary. And it is my hope that Metro and the greater community understand the incredible impact it has made upon a significant number of people in this area. It has provided a lot of empowerment for people to be more independent and contribute to the society. And I'm getting a little ahead of myself. When you do announce these town hall meetings, please do so in an alternative format so that your blind and deaf passengers will also be able to make it to these meetings and make their contributions heard.
Ms. Miller, I think you've used up your time.
Thank
you. Do you have anything critical you need to say in addition?
Yes, as a disabled person, I am asking you for your help, not as charity, but as an investment so that we can continue to be contributors that also contribute to the Metro program. Thank you.
Ms. Miller, thank you very much for your useful insights. As you will see and as you noted, later on in this agenda, we will be approving guidance to the staff in preparing the budget, which includes the issues that you discussed just now, such as the paratransit service and the kinds of policies we have relative to Metro Access, and also about the town meetings. Thank you. Mr. John Boardman.
Chairman, members of the board, other distinguished guests, my name is John Boardman. I'm Executive Secretary Treasurer of Local 25, a union that represents more than 8,000 workers in the hospitality industry here in the metropolitan area, including more than 1,200 workers at the Gaylord National Harbor Resort. I'm here before you this morning to talk to you about the recent route change, which took place on August 2nd of the NH1, but before I do that, there's been some discussion this morning about the extended hours for the inaugural. I'd like to say a belated thanks to the board and to those who facilitated those extended hours on behalf of many of our members and workers in the hospitality industry who rise early and go home late. We were able to do so and get to work on time and get home because Metro saw fit to extend those hours. This morning, I want to talk to you about the NH1. You're going to get a couple of handouts this morning, the first of which is the previous route structure. As you know, the previous route extended from Southern Avenue, a vital and vibrant hub of ground transportation and rail, and went through the neighborhoods along Southern Avenue to Indian Head Highway, culminating at the National Harbor site. That route serviced both those who have work at the National Harbor site, as well as those in the neighborhoods that were along the route. Many individuals use that particular NH1 route to facilitate their trips to Eastover Center. The second document you got was how the route looks today. The route has been moved with the starting point at Branch Avenue, three stops down the rail system, and then proceeds along a route on 495, ending up at National Harbor. Now, with all due respect, I don't know the last time any bus stopped on 495 to pick up passengers. The route doesn't work. In fact, the
Mr.
second...
Mr. Boardman?
Yes?
Let me just note for you that you have used up your time, so if you'd like to...
If you'll give me 20 more seconds, Mr. Chairman, I think I can wrap it up. The impact on those using the route are twofold. One, there is a 62%+ increase in the cost of transportation for the daily commute. Transportation times because of transfers, et cetera, doubled. The other thing we want to note for the record very quickly is that there were 167 individuals who protested the route change and only one institution that supported it. We think that speaks volumes, and we're curious as to why the route change took place over such public objection. The good news, Mr. Chairman, is that fixing this problem is very easy. The route that we're suggesting is one that you are all familiar with and know well. That is the previous route. We are asking that you reestablish that route. Secondly, and probably equally important in the current context of your debates, as your own staff report indicates, the change is revenue neutral. So returning to the previous route will not impose any additional cost on Metro. We ask for your assistance to do this on behalf of not only the workers we represent at Gaylord National, but the hundreds of workers on that site that use the route for daily commuting to and from work. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Boardman. I can assure you that the state of Maryland will take your comments under serious consideration. Yes, Mr. Zimmerman.
And I think it should be made clear for anyone watching and wondering about this that this really is a Maryland decision. It's a Metro bus route entirely within the state of Maryland, and although it's implemented here, the jurisdictions ultimately are paying the cost of those routes for the most part, the way Formula for Bus works. And those decisions are largely made in the jurisdiction. So it's just so people understand how things work in a situation like this.
Did you want to comment?
I was going to comment, but I just wasn't going to comment at this time. I think there's some other speakers, and I was going to, on this, I'm not sure if, I think there are some other speakers on this matter, and I was going to comment at the end of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. The next person is Nicholas Weil.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Nicholas Weil. I'm a resident of District of Columbia, and I'm here to talk about Metro bus marketing. Now, a lot of people, not only tourists, but longtime residents of Washington, say things like, Metro doesn't go to Georgetown, or we're just a two-minute walk or two-minute drive from Metro. I want to point out the window and tell those people that the Metro stop is right on the corner. Metro is not just a subway. Metro is 340 bus routes plus five train routes. Most of the day and much of the night, if it's close to D.C., it's probably served by Metro. That includes Georgetown, the suburbs, and all three airports. It's time to stop keeping Metro a secret and start marketing yourself effectively to your customers and potential customers. Number one, put the whole Metro system map in your stations and your trains, not just the rail map. If you're worried about overwhelming people with too much information, a good compromise would be to do what Los Angeles does. They have a special map of just frequent routes, those that run at least every 12 minutes during the day. I realize that you've already introduced excellent station-specific bus maps, but you haven't placed them conspicuously in the rail part of the station or on the trains at all, so you've just wasted your time and your money and your effort. I want to see passengers take it for granted that Metro Bus is everywhere the train is and more. It's got nice views, there are no escalators, and it's cheaper. Suggestion number two, make the schedules less optimistic, but more realistic. I've been on buses that in perfect weather and better than average traffic have fallen 2 or 3 minutes behind schedule in the first mile of their route. If your schedules prescribed a realistic range of times, say every 8 to 12 minutes rather than 3:17 p.m., you could achieve an 85 to 90% on-time performance, I think. Finally, on Metrorail, as trains approach each station, announce all connecting lines, including Metro buses, Dash, Omni Ride, etc. I want to hear L'Enfant Plaza next, transfer to the 5A Dulles, the 13 Pentagon, the yellow, blue, and orange trains, the 30s down Pennsylvania. It's time to get Washingtonians to think outside the boxcar. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Weil, and I think there are many of us who agree with you that Metro is a combination of Metro bus and Metro rail, and that too many people don't notice the fact that we have one of the best bus systems in the United States and the fifth largest. Mr. Zimmerman, you almost certainly want to comment on this one.
I think you said it very well. I would just say I hope Mr. Weil will submit his comments in writing as well. I think that they call for some follow-up. There's some number of points. I think staff would probably want to point out that, in fact, they've begun a new marketing campaign that, you know, may be consistent with what you're recommending, but you have a number of good suggestions there. I particularly like, I was out in L.A. this summer and saw the advertisements with the 12-minute map, and it is one of the things that we've been talking about here that I think would be very helpful as well. So thank you for your comments.
Next commenter is William Stroop.
Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me time. In the September 11th Washington Post, there was this statement in relationship to technological advances that the NTSB recommended to WMATA. Said a Metro spokeswoman, Lisa Farbstein, said that transit officials have been testing this technology for about a year, but that it does not always work. It provides spotty signals in Metro tunnels. Because of this erroneous statement, questions have been raised about the effectiveness of the ProTran 1 protractor and portable protractor units. Over the past several years, these units have been tested and approved for service by a number of authorities. These include the Maryland MTA, the MBTA in Boston, Massachusetts, SEPTA in Philadelphia, Amtrak in the Northeast Quarter, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Los Angeles Metro, Valley Transit Authority in San Jose, California. We've been working with WMATA for some time now in a pilot program to test the effectiveness of our equipment in augmenting the safety of workers on the tracks. In all the testing work, this equipment has been completely successful in providing warning for oncoming trains to work crews and of the presence of workers on the tracks to the train operators. We have documentation and the testimony of WMATA personnel which verifies the efficacy of the equipment. It's been reported that the equipment was tested when ProTran 1 staff was not present, and that in those circumstances it was found deficient. This is an inaccurate and erroneous report. First, it was stated that the equipment failed in WMATA tunnels. There are two problems with this statement, and I will subsequently show that these tests could not have taken place, but first, let me say that it is highly unlikely that the equipment would fail in tunnel situations. Tunnels have been one of the best places for the functioning of the protractor equipment. But second, each authority has its own regulations, topography.
Mr. Stroop, you've used up your time. Do you have something critical that you need to say to wrap it up?
Yeah, we believe that this has been erroneously reported, and that our equipment is not faulty, has been reported in the Post as said by someone from the WMATA agency. And we believe that at least that we deserve to have an official retraction of that statement that would be made by WMATA to protect the name of us and our equipment. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir. The next person is Brad Levin, and Ms. Sakura, could I request that we have some timing that's a little visible? Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the time. I am Brad Levin, and I am the agent and local representative for ProTran. And I just wanted to convey to everyone present that I was personally present on the two tests that were performed on the WMATA properties. One was done at New Carrollton, and the other was done at the Greenbelt Yards. Both tests proved to be very successful without a flaw. In addition, a lot of the representatives that were there, the WMATA representatives, clearly stated that they were pleased with performance and that they would recommend that ProTran be put into the system. In addition, I represent the company also in the Baltimore area. Baltimore MTA has gone live with the system a year ago. They are so pleased with the system that they are about to purchase a complete system for their light rail system. So I come to my customers with products that are proven and that I am confident will work for my customers, and I stand behind the units. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Let me make clear to Mr. Bartel, who's the next one who's going to come up, that if you're going to have the same discussion, the board does not make decisions on the technical details of issues like this. You're welcome to come up and talk, but please make it very brief. There are a lot of people who want to talk.
Yeah, thank you. I will. Thank you very much for the time to talk as well. Again, it's really the comment that I'm going to make is just based on the article that was published in the Washington Post and the statements that were made by Lisa Faberstein. And all I'm going to do is I've got the testing documentation that I would like to hand to the board. I've only got one copy, so copies could be made, but there are not only recommendation letters from other agencies that are using the equipment, but there are also the actual tests that were done here at WMATA, as well as the tests that were done at several other agencies as well. And I appreciate that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartel. Mr. Marks, are you going to talk about the same thing? Thank you very much. David Alpert? David? Oh, no, Mr. Brown does not want to speak.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is David Alpert. I run the website Greater Greater Washington. And I'm, by the way, here to speak on my own behalf and not for the Riders Advisory Council, which I am a member of. If you go to Boston, Chicago, New York, Portland, or many other cities and are using a tool like Google Maps to find, let's say, a restaurant, you can click a button to see which buses and trains will take you from where you are to where you're going. That's very beneficial to visitors and to riders. But unfortunately, that's still not possible here in the Washington area using Metro. Even though we're paying money to, for example, for the next bus system, this would be totally free to Metro. We've asked the staff about the reasons that we haven't had any progress on this, and we're told that there are two. First, they want to find out if they can get some revenue from Google in exchange for working together. Secondly, Metro already has a trip planner on WMATA.com. We did some research, people involved in my blog, and got copies of many of the contracts of many of the other transit agencies have with Google. None, including the much larger New York MTA or the similarly sized Chicago CTA, are getting any revenue at all from this program. As for the existing trip planner, having more options does not detract any more than having maps printed in the tourist books detracts from having maps hanging in the stations. I'm talking to you today because the budget includes a $500,000 contract to value the intellectual property that Metro has. I fully support having Metro find out how much it can get for selling hats or tote bags, for example, but I'm concerned that this will create an incentive for the contractor to come up with a high number of the value for this program, even though we know that the value is zero, and make a deal more difficult. I'd like to ask the board to investigate and find out a little bit more about this contract and the reasons that we haven't had any progress so far, and reassure the staff that it's okay to proceed on something that has a clear benefit to riders and costs nothing, when, as here, we know that the revenue opportunity is nil. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Albert. Yes, Mr. Linton.
Well, let me just say, Mr. Albert, I clearly understand your position, and I also understand the source of your information. But I will say to you very candidly that I've actually had discussions with some of those same agencies that you suggested had no revenues, and part of the fact is they never considered the opportunity for revenues. So it's not that revenues do not exist. Yes, we at Metro are looking at our intellectual property. our riders and the jurisdictions and taxpayers have to pay for these services, and it's our responsibility to look at every opportunity for revenues in every item that we do. Because another transit agency has chosen not to do that, including New York and Los Angeles and others, and I've talked with the marketing reps from those agencies, they never explored it. So that does not suggest that we should not. And I think our staff has been directed by the board to do exactly what they've done with intellectual property, because we need to make sure that we are receiving revenues for all of the assets that Metro has, and we need to consider that on behalf of all our riders.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Alpert. But I would like to pursue this question a little bit, Mr. Cato. There are, I gather from the same communications I've seen, that sort of two issues that were raised, one of which had to do with the revenue and the other which had to do with indemnification. On the revenue side, well, let me start with the indemnification side. What I have now been told is that, in fact, several of the large agencies have been successful in negotiating with Google and having them drop that requirement. I've heard that elsewhere. I've not heard that through Metro staff. And given our discussions before, I'm somewhat surprised that that wasn't brought to us as a changed circumstance. So my question is, have we approached Google and said, will you guys drop that requirement like you did for New York and Chicago?
In fact, I'm going to ask Sarah Wilson to respond because she's the person who's been assigned to it, and she's been working on this for quite a period of time.
Thank you. First, I just want to point out that with regard to revenue, that Mr. Linton is correct, and not only we did an analysis of all of the 10 major transit properties, and we are the only ones who solicit advertising on our own website. So what that means is that to the extent that we can be driving traffic to our website, that is helpful for the revenues that we derive.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's an interesting discussion. I wonder if you might possibly answer the question that I asked, and then we can talk about other things that interest you.
Identification on. Mm-hmm.
Have we asked Google if they would drop that requirement as they apparently have for other large systems?
We have asked them to drop their indemnification clauses, and they have not agreed to that.
When did we last approach them on this?
I'd have to check with counsel on that.
And did we say you did it in New York and Chicago? Why wouldn't you do it for us?
No, because we didn't know that.
Okay. Well, then I would like to suggest, Mr. Cato, that we renew that contact and see if they would not do the same here as they apparently have done in New York and Chicago. If you find out different information, that would be good for us to know. But it has been widely reported now that they dropped that what seems unreasonable requirement. And as a result, they are getting all these other large agencies to sign on. Now, as far as the revenue side goes, I certainly agree that we should explore, and I think we have a duty to explore, any possibility for revenue. And I agree with Mr. Linton that transit agencies don't always do that, and we should. And I support your efforts to find out what value any of our intellectual property may have, including those provided by the internet. On the other hand, I don't see any reason for us not to take advantage of opportunities right now today to provide more information to customers that doesn't cost us anything, as long as we protect the long-term value. In other words, we don't have to say that now and forever we're going to do something for free. Mr. Linton in an earlier meeting cited our example with car sharing, and I think it is instructive. He correctly pointed out that we are now getting some revenue back from that contract, as we should, because somebody's making money off it. And that was right. But we started out by saying, let's just get car sharing started, and the people coming in weren't going to be making a lot of money on it, and we didn't expect to make any money on it. And after a few years, we were able to do that. Right now, it seems to me there's an opportunity to provide a benefit to customers, both those who live here and those who come from around the country, to be able to use our system more effectively in a way that it looks like doesn't cost us anything. And so if there's a way to do that, and again, hold out the possibility in the future, I mean, this is a very dynamic environment. The internet changes all the time. You won't want to bind yourself well into the future, but why not do something right now? I know that I've got a trip coming up to another city. I'm going to be going to Boston for a conference. And I plugged into this thing and said, how do I get from the airport to the place the conference is? And was able to have it tell me how to use transit in the city of Boston to get from the airport to the location of the conference. The kind of thing everybody here has probably done, you know, on the web when they're driving somewhere. And, you know, that's what Mr. Albert's talking about. And it seems to me that's a very tangible benefit that we could have. And I don't see anything that I've heard or even told that says, you know, we can't do that without causing some kind of long-term damage. I don't see what the loss to us, assuming we could clear up this indemnification issue, what significant cost would there be to us in allowing that to happen in Washington, D.C. and its surroundings, just as right now is the case in New York, in Chicago, in Boston, and apparently most of the major cities in the country.
Mr. Zimmerman, if I may. Mr. Albert, thank you very much. It seems that you have gotten the discussion going, which is what you intended. But we do have an extremely long board meeting coming, and rather than continuing this discussion now, this perhaps belongs in one of our committee meetings.
I'm happy to have it referred to.
And yes, I think that would be the most appropriate thing for the Operations Committee to deal with. Mr. Bill Orleans, is he here?
Yes.
He's right here.
Somewhere. Good morning, all, or good afternoon, all. There are some of us living in Wamataland that would be without any entertainment whatsoever were it not for board and board committee meetings. And I, for one, sort of want to take exception to what occurred in August. August was, generally when I go to meetings, I address the chair. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Orleans.
August is a long month and a hot month, and it was hotter this year because of what had preceded it. It should have been expected that the board would meet at some point in August, and I want to take exception to its meeting by telephone method, and it being that method being deemed executive session. I am one who enjoys the entertainment of these meetings, at least. I'm also someone living in Wamataland who is without any form of communication other than by my presence. I cannot email the system. I cannot telephone the system. I can leave no number, so it's pointless to do that. I have to come and be present in order to ask a question and hopefully get an answer. Several times this year, I had a customer service question and tried to track down Mr. Castillo at Silver Spring. I understand he's now in Hyattsville. On one of those occasions, I went to Silver Spring only to find that he was meeting here. I'm hoping that the board and staff will consider having some form of customer service presence here in this building for those of us who cannot communicate other than by our presence. I have a backlog of several questions, several complaints. I, of course, could write a letter, which I've done here in the building, but I have done so without getting a response to that letter and or request. So it would be useful, I think, to have someone present here in the building that could deal with people as they line up in the morning to either complain and or compliment the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Orleans. That concludes our public comment period, which finally brings us to approval of the agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize, Ms. Hewitt. You wanted to comment on the NH1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as you said, this does pertain to the NH1 bus service. First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Boardman and the others who came down here today to tell us about the problems and the difficulties they're having with the NH1 service. And I thank you for the exhibits, which we will look at as well. Mr. Boardman originally contacted Mr. Graham, who's gone, who then turned this over to my colleague, Mr. Solomon, and myself. I had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Boardman and by telephone in August and again briefly today in person. As I told Mr. Boardman then, this request originated at the request of the requested change originated from Gaylord Hotel and was evaluated by WMATA in conjunction with Prince George's County Department of Public Works and Transportation and also with the Maryland Department of Transportation. But now we're hearing concerns that we were not aware of originally. So after we talked, I brought your concerns to the attention of the state and again to WMATA and also to the County Department of Public Works and Transportation. They are evaluating and looking into see if there's anything that they can be that can be done from their standpoint first. I would also like to take this opportunity to ask Mr. Cato to ask our folks to look into it and provide a detailed report on a couple of things. First of all, the public hearing process. I'd like a detailed review of the public comments pertaining to this NH1 bus service. So a detailed report on that. An analysis of the NH1 service since the changes were implemented in August. And then finally, any other recommendations that you may have. And please, in so doing, and I've talked to Jim Hughes and others already, if we can also work with the Prince George's Department of Public Works and Transportation and with the Maryland Department of Transportation as well to see, you know, to come forth with some recommendations, that would be helpful for starters. Thank you.
I will do so, ma'am.
Thank you.
Which does finally bring us to the approval of the agenda so we can start this meeting. Are there any additions, changes, or corrections to the agenda? If not, the agenda is approved as provided. The minutes of July 16th are before you. I move approval of the minutes.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Report by the Riders Advisory Council. Ms. Sinkle, we apologize that it's been so long in getting to you. May I request that since you have everything in front of us that we can read, that you summarize as much as possible and add anything that you need to?
Okay, now it's on. Okay. All right. Well, we'll do as I typically do. Thank you very much, Mr. Benjamin. And members of the board, I am pleased to present you with the Riders Advisory Council report for August and September. As Mr. Orleans knows, and I'm sure he is happy to know, while some here in D.C. follow the tradition of taking a hiatus in August, the RAC forged ahead and had an August meeting this year. And now let me also take out a moment to just congratulate Mr. Cato on being with us for a few more years. We're looking forward to continuing to work with you. And of course, I say that on my own behalf, but I think I'm safe in speaking for the RAC with regard to today's events. All right, in terms of what we've been up to the past couple of months at the RAC is, first, as I think we are all aware, we will soon be, hopefully, welcoming four new board members, federal board members, to the board of WMATA. And the RAC did take the opportunity to send a letter to Administrator Prouty at GSA to express what we hope to see in our federal members. Everyone at the RAC appreciates the capacity and experience of our current members, both in terms of their current roles in their communities as well as their past experience. And we really do hope that the federal government takes an opportunity to build on that and expand the capacity of the board, you know, acknowledging how much experience both within WMATA and within the federal government our current board members already bring to the table. Secondly, we have very much welcomed the board taking a forward-looking approach to the fiscal 2011 budget process this year. As I'm sure you all remember, the RAC back earlier this year did request that the board start looking at the fiscal 11 budget perhaps a little bit more forward-looking than in fiscal 10. And specifically, we really do hope that as we go through an earlier process this year that the public are given specific choices and options with an understanding of the likely consequences of changes to both the budget and as well to any kind of service changes. I think this will allow the board and the authority to receive meaningful feedback on any changes prior to the January the midwinter process. We've also, the council at our September meeting also received a presentation specifically on capital planning at WMATA, and we have a number of questions following on that presentation, specifically about specific projects that contribute to the $11 billion capital needs backlog, the authority's priorities, the distinction that's drawn by the authority between capital expansion and capital maintenance, and how 2010 and 2011 funds will be allocated to existing capital needs. So we look forward to having more information on those specific capital issues moving forward. Now, moving on, our good friends from who were here with us today from Local 25 did visit us at our September meeting as well to talk about the NH1 service. This was an enlightening experience for the members of the RAC, and it also raised a number of issues that I think were, you know, many of us are really new to WMATA, and it's a volunteer position. We don't understand everything that WMATA does and how we interplay with the jurisdictions, I think the way some of the board and staff do. So we're really looking forward to continuing to explore this issue as kind of a case study and a learning opportunity for us as a distinction between bus policy, bus operations, and how WMATA interacts with the jurisdiction. So we are hoping to have actually a special meeting dedicated to this issue in the coming weeks, and really look forward to hearing more about this and really using it as a learning experience. And lastly, on rider communications, as you're also aware, we did send a letter as well to General Manager Cato about planned service disruptions and how the authority communicates with the riding public on planned service disruptions. And this is something that, again, I think there's a real learning opportunity sort of as to what the riding public needs and how to best make sure that folks understand how much what WMATA is doing and really how operations are planned and how much forward information can really be provided and how to best make sure that folks are also aware of alternatives and that adequate alternatives are provided. And just lastly, with regard to council business, we are continuing to discuss bylaw amendments in anticipation of the five-year update requirement in our existing bylaws, and we actually are hoping to get a little bit ahead and hopefully have something for you by later this fall with the idea that the bylaw changes would be effective in January 2010. And we're also developing a list of potential agenda items, not only for this year, but also moving into next year. And lastly, and last but not least, I have to say that I am very glad to be standing at this podium today using a microphone that works. You know, in a very literal sense, the riders and the public of the National Capital Region can now be heard by the authority and the board of WMATA. And I think that very literal outcome hopefully will lead to a more representative or figurative outcome in future meetings. And with that, I will conclude my monthly report, and I look forward to answering any questions that you may have.
Thank you for your report, Ms. Zinkel.
Thank you.
Any questions? No. We have already had the report by the chairman, so we go to the report by the general manager, Mr. Cato.
Mr. Chairman, given that it is a written report and you have copies of it, and I basically covered most of the information, unless desired by the board, I would just let the written copies stand.
Thank you, Mr. Cato.
Okay.
And you have, we do have also a segment of spotlight.
We do have a recognition we'd like to do.
Please.
I know. Mr. Benjamin, if I could have you join Mr. Cato in the center of the room. I can have Mr. Bernard Langley. Mr. Langley, if you can join Mr. Cato or Mr. Benjamin. Okay. On January 22nd, train operator Bernard Langley was approaching the Forest Glen Metrorail station when he observed someone walking on the tracks in the tunnel. He was able to stop the train and convince the person to climb on board his train. He radioed for help, and the customer was met by support personnel at the Fort Bend Metrorail station. This month, train operator Bernard Langley is our employee spotlight. His quick action and his compassion for the well-being of an individual saved the life of someone. Mr. Bernard Langley.
The next area is the report by Finance, Administration, and Oversight. I call on myself to present this report. And our first item under that is budget guidance. I'd like to draw the attention of the board members to the resolution that's included, and I'll try and summarize as much as I can. But there's some very important things I want to make sure, because when we sent this from committee to the board, we had three different items that had to be integrated, and whether that integration occurred correctly or not is what you need to decide at this moment. First of all, the budget will be presented in December and it will be balanced. Second of all, I'd like to make a change to the second whereas, which is not worded quite the way that I think Mr. Zimmerman intended and worded it when he passed the resolution on fair policy, or when he proposed the resolution on fair policy and we passed it. It calls for an increase in fares in 2011, really at the rate of inflation for the preceding 2 years, not at twice the rate of inflation. So with that change, is that okay, Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, you correctly captured what the board did as opposed to what this says, so I agree with that. I also have something else on this one.
Okay. So on that one, that change I'd like to make part of our motion. The change I would make is after 2011, change the word capped, leave in the word at, drop the word twice, and after inflation, add for the preceding 2 years, which in fact reflects what I think got passed by the board. The detailed guidance is shown in the bullets. One is that there's a low probability of increased jurisdictional assistance in 2011. The second is the whereas that's above. The third is to see whether we want to use any capital funding for preventive maintenance, and if so, what the impact would be. The next one is policy changes associated with metro access, and the next one is recommendations on bus and rail service so as to provide a better balance, a balanced budget. And finally, that the general manager and staff give us a process for holding a series of town meetings. And the important part here is presentations for Metro stakeholders and the public on the choices and challenges in the budget. Mr. Zimmerman, you wanted to comment.
Okay. What I wanted to focus on was the third bullet that refers to preventive maintenance. It says, as an alternative, determine whether an increased use of capital funding for preventive maintenance may be needed to balance the proposed 2011 budget and assess the associated impact on the capital program. Well, first I will say that I think that I know a priori that taking money from preventive maintenance to not do something else like raise fares, increase subsidies, or think about the service we provide is not an acceptable alternative as far as I'm concerned. I think it is highly unlikely at the end of this long budget process that I would choose to do that over some combination of the other things. But I absolutely think it is inappropriate to start with budget guidance that says, well, you got that out. So I don't think this should be here at all. What we need, and I think the guidance otherwise has the right parameters. It says we got a fair policy, so take that into account. And if you want to make other recommendations fair, then you can't do that. But you've got a guidance that says what we expected with fares, what we told everybody. Subsidy is always a hard thing of what number, but starting with the number you had is probably as good a guess as anything. knowing that it might go down, and we're not ruling out the possibility of asking for it to go up, because other people have to make those decisions that they have not yet made. And looking at the levels of service and what you do and what the options are, those are things you should do. But to start out now, especially right now, when if there's anything we have our attention focused on, it is that problems, long-term problems we have in our system are the result of not having enough money going into maintenance and capital over a long period of time. That seems to me just the wrong place to start your budget guidance. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we strike the third bullet in the resolution.
I don't think we have a motion on the floor yet, but we can certainly work on this.
And I would request that we do so at this
certainly. Let me note that this, as structured, is exactly the way that we moved it out of committee, and that this issue was, in fact, one of the items that was moved from committee to the board. I have no problem with striking it from this resolution. Is there anybody else that feels otherwise? Okay, let's strike that one from the resolution.
So, Chairman,
Mr. Linton, yeah.
So we're acknowledging that this did reflect our thinking at the time.
Mr. Linton. Thank you.
Thank you. So we are acknowledging that this did reflect the thinking of the committee at the time.
This was in fact one of the items that was sent that the committee said should be included in the resolution. The committee had a list of items that were the proposals by the staff that for us to consider. This was one of those. And so it was sent by committee to the board, not exactly this wording because those were bullets, but the consideration of capital funding for preventive maintenance being used was there. And we are at this point saying, although we sent it here, we're agreeing to take it back out.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure.
Yep. Anybody else? In that case, I move the resolution with the changes that we have just discussed. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ms. Hudgens. I'm also looking at the fourth bullet, and it says proposed policy changes. And I think what I and we had a discussion about this. I thought what we wanted was to see the options that were there. My problem is that if we start with a structure, we will lose sight of what other input can be there. And maybe others don't see the proposed policy changes as constraining as I see it, because I'm looking for alternatives or options. But the policy part is a much more restrictive piece.
How about present policy options and everything else the same?
But you know, what change would you like to make that would make you feel better?
Well, I would be less constraining and say provide a list of alternatives.
Provide alternatives?
Yes. And I understand why we, yeah.
Okay, so strike proposed policy changes and instead put in provide alternatives. Is there any objection to that? Okay. Again,
excuse
Mr.
me.
Linton.
I need to ask the lady in terms of presenting policy alternatives. You're still looking for options that will provide you with the same outcome, or what do you mean by alternatives?
Well,
I'm not quite clear where that's going.
Let me tell you what the issue is here, and it really was spoken to during the public process here. I think we got into this one because we wanted to try and determine the growth aspect of the Metro Access system. What I guess it explains that we're going to look at service costs and alternative savings that we can have. And I rather than structured as a policy in which may not get the level of discussion that's needed, but rather start us in a direction that really may be more difficult for all of us to agree on, is to provide the alternatives or options that are there rather than make a policy statement, and we'll derive the policy statement. And there is a different way to arrive at the process.
Okay.
Are there any other comments on this one? If not, let me move again this item with the change in the second whereas to clarify the FAIR policy, with the deletion of the third bullet, and in the fourth bullet, deleting the words proposed policy changes and substitute provide alternatives.
Second.
There's a Motion and a second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? This one passes. Our next item is the fiscal 10 budget amendment for Department of Homeland Security funded projects. This is one in which there was substantial discussion about the operating effects, and the general manager has sent to us a clarification of the effects of these grants on the metro operating budget. And I just wanted to choose some key words in there that were in the memo and then see if the general manager wants to add to that. The memo states that currently the grants, the DHS grants, will not pay for the maintenance of operating expenses that follow the installation of more than 1,000 cameras and video equipment within our metro system. He also says that DHS grants can fund maintenance through the life of the grant. He also wants to clarify that there's new text, which is near the end of this thing, which just says that there will be 14, not 21, new positions created in 2012. And that's the new text clarifies that there are 9 additional positions in 2011 and 5 more in 2012 for this maintenance. The bottom line is that if Metro had to absorb the cost for the maintenance for the life of grants, the associated cost would be about $1.5 million in 2011 for the 9 FTEs and $1.9 million in 2012, which includes the other 5 getting to 14. Mr. Cato, do you want to add something?
Yes, and I apologize for that error at the time of the committee meeting, but after our additional discussions with the Department of Homeland Security, they made it very clear to us that the preventative maintenance, if it's done on the contract with an outside contractor, they will pay for it. But if it's maintained by our employees, then they cannot reimburse us for that. And we're still trying to get a change because we don't quite understand the difference. And we've been, hopefully over time we'll be able to do that, but I can't give you that certainty. And so I wanted to be very upfront in what the additional costs would be.
Thank you. So basically where we are now is the request is to apply $6,820,291 of grant funds to the FY10 operating budget, which means that gets added, and $60,369,913 of grant funds to the FY2010 Capital Metro Matters Program, authorized 25 DHS grant-funded positions to the Metro Police Department. And as a result of this, we are going to have a $78,317,339 million grant, of which $60 million is for capital projects and $17 million is for operating projects over several years. The detail of those projects is shown very carefully in great detail in this presentation. There are 16 of them carefully laid out for us, and the funding available is also very carefully laid out. So it's a very thorough presentation in a lot of different ways. Also, the projects are summarized in the attachment to the resolution. Is there a motion to approve this resolution?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded that this resolution be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Ewell.
Sorry. Part of our discussion in committee, we were concerned about the impacts of continuing, if we were to pick up and absorb these acquisitions costs, these acquisitions after the grant funds ran out, we were concerned about the impacts it would have on the operating budget, particularly for FY 2010 and 11 and further on. Can we have some language perhaps incorporated in a resolution that asks for an analysis to be conducted or provided rather for 10 and 11 in terms of the impact on the operating budget?
Well, the impact on 10 and 11 is zero. It's the out years.
It's 12 and,
well,
12 and beyond is where
I mean,
it is.
Actually, it would be through 10 through 15. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that was, in fact, a discussion that we had, and there was a lot of detailed information given to us
but I guess
at the meeting,
have something
so
in the resolution.
That is available. Okay. All right. But we all acknowledged at the meeting that, in fact, this did create the high probability that we were going to have to find additional funds or make cuts elsewhere in order to accommodate, in particular, the 25 DHS grant-funded positions that are currently under operating. I think we had a motion and a second, and we were just voting yes or no. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? No one's opposed. This one is passed. We go to the report by Planning, Development, and Real Estate. And I believe that's Ms. Hewlett.
I'm still here.
Oh, you're here.
Yeah,
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr.
Sorry.
Benjamin. We have, we have a number of items on Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. The committee met on September 10, 2009. The first action item is the amended sale of Arlington Bus Garage. Metro staff has sought approval to amend the sale of the Arlington Bus Garage agreement to allow the developer to take down the site in two phases rather than one phase. I move approval of this action. Is there a second?
Sorry.
All those in favor?
That actually I got to do. Oh. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Please keep going. My apologies.
Thanks,
Mr. Albert.
Benjamin. Our second item is the extension of negotiating period for Shaw Howard University Station Florida Avenue parcels. As you know, WMATA staff has been discussing with the developer to arrive at a term sheet for the disposal of the Shaw Howard University parcels. It's my understanding that negotiations are going well, but there is a need for an extension of time to not just come back with a term sheet, but hopefully more concrete agreement. So I move extension of time for 120 days to give the staff to try and seal this deal.
And is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Moved and is that a legal second?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, for Mr. Yes. Okay. That's, sorry.
That's
and
fine.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Yes.
The third item is the action to initiate a new on-call A&E contract. Staff sought to obtain approval to initiate six on-call professional architectural engineering and planning services contracts for fiscal years 2011 to 2016. It should be noted that the staff will have to return to the board annually to award these contracts, so this is not giving staff blanket approval to award contracts, and would have to provide estimates to the board on an annual basis. I move that we provide the staff with permission to initiate these on-call contracts.
Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hudgens? It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Next one.
Great. Moving right along. Action is to initiate the first Orange Blue Line System rehab contract. Again, working with the staff, the committee seeks your approval to initiate a project to provide a system infrastructure renewal program for the Orange Line from the Stadium Armory to Roslyn Metro stations along the Benning Road aerial structure and the Minnesota Avenue and Deanwood Metro Station platform repairs, and the Blue Line from Stadium Armory to Reagan National Airport Metro Stations, and the authority to initiate a contract to accomplish this project. Again, as in many of these cases, staff will return to the board to award this contract. I move approval of this action.
Second.
Before we vote on this one, I'm still concerned. We didn't really get a clarification of the issue that we discussed in committee. There is a note in remarks that says $41,500,000 are requested for the project, but that part of that includes essentially Metro staffing, that only $33,000 is the contract amount. And presumably that applies to the remainder of the $380 million that we're being asked to approve. So I guess the question I have is, since we only approve contracts and not Metro staff activity, what is the amount that we're being asked to approve?
Mr. Benjamin, we're asking for approval to initiate the activity to provide a vendor to provide these services once the actual budget is finalized under the new capital improvement program.
And is there an upper limit to what you're asking the authority to?
The desire is to for a contract of $380 million over the life of the contract.
Is that the contract amount, or is that
that's
contract plus staff?
It's the program cost, which I believe the contract amount would be some number less than that.
Normally, you come to us with what that contract amount is. Do you have an estimate of that? Do you know how much the staff cost is in this overall program?
The estimated contract is in the area of $300 million.
Do you want to have us approve $300 million and then you come back? You got to come back anyway.
We're going to come back anyway. What we're asking for is the authority to initiate the procurement activities for a contractor. Okay. And once the capital program is approved, we would come back to you for approval of this contract itself.
Okay. What this illustrates is the problem with us approving something like the plan of contracts where the amounts are not clear and what it is that we're approving is not clear. So are we saying that this action is to allow you to move ahead to get a contract with no upper limit, noting that you'll come back to us with the actual amount, or do you want to choose an upper limit for it?
Well, the anticipated upper limit is $380 million.
So would you change your motion to include the upper limit of $300 million, please?
Yes.
Okay.
So my motion is to recommend approval of the action for staff to initiate our conversations to with an upper limit of $380,000.
Million.
$380 million.
$380 million. And seconder, please.
I agree.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This one passes. Mr. Albert.
Great. Our next item is, again, to provide staff with the approval to initiate, again, just to initiate contracts for the rehab of a few railroad yards, Alexandria, Brentwood, New Carlton Station. So I recommend approval of this contract.
You're moving approval?
I'm moving approval.
And is there a second?
Second.
And there's a second. Let me just ask the same question. Are there staff costs included in this one?
Yes.
There is within the $127 million. So that would be the upper limit.
Well, what would you suggest without the staff costs for the contracting element?
You know, Mr. Benjamin, I'm not sure of that number. I'm estimating in the area of 90 to 100 million.
If we chose 100 million, would that be an acceptable number? You have to come back to us anyway.
To come back.
That's acceptable.
Okay. Will you accept?
So I amend my action to seek approval up to $100 million.
Okay. To initiate up to $100 million. And Mr. Zimmerman agrees. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Okay, the next one, Mr. Albert.
So this is the next one is the approval of public hearing staff report for the Cinderbed road bus facility. Hopefully there's no upper limits to this. limit. I move approval of the public hearing staff report.
Second.
Mr. Zimmerman is seconding. Any comment?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Ewell, then Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly support this. I just need to put a plug in that this will help us move along the future closing of the Royal Street Bus Barn in Old Town Alexandria, which has been a sticky point for us for the past 8-9 years that I've been on the board. So I'm glad to see that this is at least a move in the right direction. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, as I indicated at the committee meeting, this is a really important step for WMATA on a regional basis for a lot of reasons. I won't repeat all that here, but I did want to note again that this action not only approves the hearing record, but amends the adopted regional system to include this bus operations and maintenance facility. And that is, I think, the most significant action that we are taking procedurally here, and it should be noted. Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor of this motion, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, say no. Okay, we now move to the report by the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have just two simple items, fairly simple items. These are requests to conduct public hearings, one in Virginia and one in Maryland. The first is a request to conduct public hearing on the proposed restructuring of the regional metro bus routes 28A and 28B that comprise the Leesburg Pike Line. That's Route 7 for many of you. As part of the Bus Priority Corridor Network, the committee recommends approval, and on behalf of the committee, I move approval.
Is there a second? I'm sorry.
Who's second?
Ms. Hudgens is the second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? This one is passed. The next one is 2-2.
The second one is in Maryland, Beers Mill Road, which is a request to conduct public hearing on the proposed restructuring of the regional Metro Bus Route 2-2 Beers Mill Road line as part of the Bus Priority Corridor Network. The committee recommends approval, and on behalf of the committee, I do so move.
And I second. All in favor of this one? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
That concludes All right. my report, Mr. Chairman.
That concludes your report. First item and administrative items, we have 31.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms.
I don't know if you were going to do them on bonk or not, but I have some questions, so I'd request that we not. I don't know how you want to go about it.
I'm sorry, you requested
I have some questions on some of these administrative
items.
Yes, identify the ones.
Yeah, I guess the question is, at this point, I know of questions on numbers.
I have seven.
You have
number
seven.
Number seven is the only one.
Number seven. Okay, that's the only one? Three, four, six, and seven are... Does anybody else have specific
yes.
ones that they want?
Yes.
I know you're set, I think. Do you have anything to add to it?
No.
No? Okay. So I will entertain a motion to approve items 1, 2, 5, 9, 10, 12, 17 through 19, 21 through 28, 30 and 31. Ms. Hewlett, have I missed any of yours?
No.
Okay.
Second.
Oh.
Okay. Is that the motion?
That was a motion and a second. Is there any comment on the ones that we are doing en masse? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Those are passed, which brings us to number three.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on number three. It may be easily explainable, but item three is the approval to initiate and award a sole source contract to Alstom to repair door control units on the 1000 series rail cars. And I just would like someone to explain to me, how long this is going to take, given that we are planning on retiring those cars. So I don't know how long, and why this, it's not an egregious amount, but just put it in context for me, why it's needed and how long this will take versus how long it will take to retire these cars.
Hello? Okay. The overall project will take a little over a year to install and modify. And the purpose behind this is whenever you use a auto open feature in these rail cars, we have been able to demonstrate that the signals we have some invalid signals that are not filtered properly, and we do have the potential for doors to open up on the wrong side. And so this is going to be installed to prevent that. And we are making these modifications also on the rest of our fleets as well.
And you said it'll take a little over a year?
Yes, a little over a year to complete the fleet.
Okay. Are you okay?
I'm okay with that.
Would you like to move this one?
I would move approval on that instance.
And I second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That one is approved. Number four, I have a question about number four. This is another one where I'm not quite sure what we're approving. And the item that's before us, the amount is $5,900,000. In the plan of contracts, which is referred to here, the same item as $5,500,000. So which one is right?
The 5-9.
5 and 9 is right. So are you telling me the plan of contracts has erroneous information in it?
Can I? And actually, we are able to get vendor pricing that would modify the estimate, and we brought that forward when we mailed the information to the board.
So presumably, some of the other contracts in the plan of contracts would go down, right?
Yes. Yes.
Did any go?
I'm sorry, Ms. Hudgens?
Any go up?
Did any other, well, since we're not doing the plan of contracts right now, I think what we're doing is raising the issue. Well, we don't really know what's going on. All the numbers keep moving, which is one of the concerns that I think I voiced in committee about the plan of contracts. Okay, with the clarification that this one is at the higher level of $5.9 million, I move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Okay, the next item is number six.
Yes, I have a question. And after we do six, if I could go directly to 20, because they seem to be related. Item six talks about modifications. It's a request to modify contract FN5089 for traction power substation equipment installation. But it says modification. It's multiple modifications. So I don't really know what it means. And I'd like some clarification on that. I mean, what are we modifying?
This contract.
Very lightly. It's a lightly touch.
All right, this contract was for the modification of the traction power substation installation contract. And there are several modifications onto this contract that will have to be closed out. This job is now complete, and this is the effort to complete changes and mods that occurred under the installation of this and bring this contract to closure. So that is the effort to set aside these funds for that purpose.
Okay, so there were already contract modifications, you're saying?
There are changes that are being settled right now as a part of the closeout process.
Do you have a for instance?
Well, for instance, there might have been an installation contract at a given location and access might have been disrupted because of a particular issue and the crew had to leave and return, and that would be a change to the contract that would be the cost of the remobilizing of the staff. Or in the instance of, I know one site we had encountered asbestos, the contract had to be modified for the cleanup before they can proceed.
Okay. I guess this one I just wasn't clear about. I just didn't have enough information. And I don't know if that answers anybody else's questions? Mr. Cato?
If I could, Mr. Chair, I'm not totally clear, and I understand that we can bring this back in October. I'm not willing to, unless I'm totally clear, and that's my error.
Okay.
No one else. So if I could, Mr. Chair, to withdraw this and bring it back.
Would the same one apply to 20, item 20?
Yes, item 20 is a similar contract. The installation throughout the system were two contracts, the two separate contractors. This is the other contract for installation of equipment.
I will bring it back.
Both of them. Okay.
Okay, so both items 6 and 20 withdrawn. We won't take any votes on that. Item number 7, which is the geographic information system. The question that I had on this one was, this is a new initiative, which sounds good, sounds very good, but it has some pretty significant long-term implications because we're now committing to something where, and I, I think it's very good that you laid all of this out for us. We're talking about adding 7 full-time equivalents and a cost beginning next year of $776,000 per year. Escalating, this gets added to the DHS costs that we're doing. So what we're doing here is we're going through a series of capital program projects, which in and of themselves may be very appropriate, but we're creating ourselves a real problem for fiscal 2011 and 2012 and operating. I just want to voice that concern at this point that I don't see how we're going to balance budgets when we just went through a set of guidance that we just talked about, and we charge ahead with fully justified and very appropriate capital projects that have these kinds of operating impacts. And my comment is, I want to see what the cuts are going to be in the budget that will accommodate these kinds of activities. We're not approving those 7 additional positions right now, but how are we going to go about doing these kinds of things? We have the DHS stuff, we have this, there are several others with substantial operating impacts. I'm prepared to move this one, but I'd like a comment from the general manager that says, I know where I'm going to get the money to pay for the operations.
This is really a result, Mr. Benjamin, and I thank you for saying it as well, of your conversation several months ago with us, saying, where you begin new programs, make sure we absolutely know up front what the results are going to be. So the yin and the yang are, and I think you understand this as well, there is enormous value to having this enterprise GIS activity, enormous value to the web applications that we're building to increase efficiencies within the departments, and enormous value already obtained from the new internet portal that we have and the work we're doing with the intranet portal. So the value that's being brought, I think, of the technology, everyone understands. And we want to make absolutely sure, just as the general manager said to you a few minutes ago on a different alternative, that we say to you up front in 2011, for the kinds of technologies we've never had in the past, that there is a cost to maintain those. What you build has to be maintained. So 3 people, when we build this enterprise GIS system, 3 people have to maintain it. They did not exist before. When we build this very much broadened intranet and these services, the value is huge, but in the IT department, 2 people have to maintain it. And in the web applications, which bring tremendous efficiencies within the departments, again, once the Capitol building has been done, 2 people have to maintain it. And in addition, we need to maintain the software systems, the COT software systems.
Let me stop you, Ms. Peck. We appreciate that. I don't think anybody here disagrees with you. This is, in fact, a very worthwhile activity, and you've done exactly the right thing in letting us know what the operating impact is, which is something that we have requested, and that's very important. What I'm just noting is, as we're moving ahead, we are seeing these things add up. And let me say what I said before. In the plan of contracts, we don't see some of this detail. And what is it that we're committing ourselves to totally in the future? And are we in a position where in 2011, in a budget where we just said we're really, really going to be tight, do we see places where we can make reductions somewhere else to accommodate these 7 full-time equivalents that Ms. Peck is telling us are going to be added?
I cannot answer that question at this moment because we have not developed the 2011 budget. The issue that is being articulated here, and it will continue and it happens all the time, there are projects that we must do, and there are projects that we should do to improve the quality of our services or the services that we operate that will have operational impacts. In some years, those operational dollars we're able to do it because of the increased revenues we're getting in from various sources. 2011 is going to be a very difficult year. We are going to have to make choices. And if by having these impacts, We're going to have to make choices someplace else in the budget. I can't tell you where that's at right now because we have not developed that budget.
Mr. General Manager, are you telling us that we should go ahead and approve this and that you will, in fact, find the place, the places in the budget to make cuts to fund this?
No.
Why are we approving it?
I'm not saying it that clear. I think the question becomes, is this a worthwhile program to move forward with that one? We looked at other cuts within the budget to fund it. Or two, is it so worthwhile that it benefits the region and the quality of our service that is a cost increase that we have to accommodate in the budget? I don't want to sit here and tell you something. I'm not absolutely sure how I'm going to do it yet until I start working on the budget.
Let me encourage you, and I guess Ms. Hutchins has a comment here too. Let me encourage you to do the discussion that we're having right now with your staff as you're putting together these projects, because the numbers keep going up and up and up. And if you start looking at these and you look at the ones we haven't even looked at yet, we are creating a liability in 2011, 2012, 2013 at a time when we have other significant problems that we need to address and funding limitations. And I don't say that we shouldn't go ahead, but I do know that if we don't do so without that careful consideration, we're going to find ourselves with Ms. Peck developing a really, really good project that we can't run because we don't have the money to run it.
Well, the economy, to get back to the point, you're absolutely right. But the projections for the FY11 budget assumes that there will be some increased operational expenditures. And we have to accommodate those within that budget itself. You're asking me a specificity that right now I don't have the answer to.
I understand you don't, but the issue is the combination of items. Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you. I just wanted to try and make sure that I'm where this item is, and as I looked at it, it brought me back to the, and I can only think is the red and blue chart that describe the infrastructure that is lacking in this organization. So I think you're really right, Mr. Benjamin, when you talk about our awareness, but I think we started down this path a while ago, and some of what we're facing is the fact that we have some foregone investments that actually hinder the efficiency of this organization, and therefore we are going to have to find other places. Question is, can we forego this? And it seems as though the answer is no, as I arrived at my decision.
I am hearing that the general manager feels that we should move ahead and understands the implication.
Yes.
Mr. Gene Culler, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I agree with what's been said. I would add that it would be helpful. First of all, I support this particular initiative. But it would be helpful if the general manager would provide kind of a summary of all the items of, okay, which ones are an expansion of our service, which ones are replacing some of the service, and, of course, the operational impacts, not just in the first 2 years, but let's run it out a few more years. And just so we can see that as we approach the working documents for our budget next year, and you know, we may have to make some serious decisions later on about, well, maybe we can't expand the service right now, but we probably, you know, if it's a replacement or if it's revenue neutral, then maybe we could proceed on it. But right now I don't really have a sense because we've already heard about the security grants and what the operational impact is. There's nits and nats here and there with some of these new projects that impact operations, so we need to really kind of see a total package of that kind of exhibit that shows us the operational impact. So I certainly would like to see that.
With the general manager's support, I move approval of this item. Is there a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? We're quickly losing our members. Item 8, the concern that I have on this one is it refers to the plan of contracts, item 69. There are three different items that it refers to. The second one for $1.6 million and the third one for $700,000, I have no question about. But the first one for $2.6 million, item 69 is about next fair, at least in the plan of contracts. and that doesn't read like what I see here. So which is it?
No, the reference to next year, Mr. Chairman, was an error and has been removed.
Okay. I guess I can just keep saying I feel real nervous about plan of contracts at the level we get them. And what we're doing is seeing that within a week after, 2 weeks after you wanted us to approve the plan of contracts, it's changing already, which is perfectly legitimate, but that's, you know, it's just an issue.
There is no change. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Okay, it was just worded wrong?
Yes, the words were incorrect. The reference to next year was an incorrect reference and was removed.
Okay. I'm ready to move item 8. I move. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hewlett? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No? No, that's not me. Okay. Our next one is
11.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Just covered over my little list. Sorry. Too many pieces of paper floating around.
Item 11.
Yeah. Now, next one is item 11. And let me look at my own stuff because I was one of the ones that. Oh, this one, it's my question. It's the difference between the plan of contracts and what we have here. Plan of contracts talks about bus support equipment and facilities for item 85. And this one talks about the bus OCC. I have no problem with us moving ahead with the bus OCC, and I have no problem with this project. What I do have a concern about is bus OCC is a fairly significant and well-identified item, yet the plan of contracts makes me think that we're buying lug wrenches and tires. So I don't quite see them as being equivalent. And so I'm ready to move this one, but it's the same comment as I've had before. I don't know how to interpret these items when I finally see the project, and the project appears to be somewhat different. Am I clear that this is, in fact, to get the equipment to operate the bus OCC? Is that the project?
No.
Yes, that's correct. It's specifically for the OCC, including hardware, computer hardware, and furniture, and so on.
Okay. I move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
We got about 3 seconds there. I'll choose Ms. Hewlett. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed? We move to item 13. Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I have questions on 13, 14, and 15, so that'll be Ms. Peck followed by Chief Taborn. Ms. Peck, on item 13, I noticed that these are for 4 procurements and for a consultant. And if you could elaborate, number one, and then two, tell me whether I'm still trying to be mindful of the financial crisis we're in, and I'd like to know if all 4 of these are urgent.
This particular board action asks us for the ability to acquire specialized skills for our data center upgrade. Thank you for Ms. Hudgens for referring back to the pyramid, and in the pyramid, our data center operations were in very poor conditions, and we are upgrading not only our foreground data center here at JGB, but a background data center at Common Turner. So we build with consultants, we maintain with employees, and for the specialized build skills that we need, of which these are 4 different types, 4 the data center upgrade and for the building the redundancy of our data center so that we have real-time failover and we are, all of our systems are always available and reliable. We don't have and do not need these skills on an ongoing employee basis, but we need these skills for the build.
Okay.
And so these are all skills for people that we need on the build. And they'll build the redundancy for the, these are people who have skills that help us build the redundancy for our critical applications that are going to put us into a tapeless environment, that are going to consolidate our servers from about 300 down to about 130, and that are going to give us a backup and recovery redundancy capability. And so we need those people just for the period in which we do those builds, and we need their specialized skills for that period.
Thank you, Ms. Peck, for that answer, because that helps shed some light on it. And do you have any, can you tell me what that period might be approximately, and is there any operating budget impact?
That is for about a year's period, and there is no operating impact.
Okay.
In fact, we get more efficient operations after we do these activities.
That helps me. And with that, you have a question. There's a question. I'd be happy to move forward.
Mr. Giancola,
thank you. The follow-on question to that. So these specialists are actually serving as a role as contract inspector for us. Is that right? In other words, they're not installing it. They're actually being our eyes and ears to monitor the contractor's installation of these facilities. Is that how I understand it?
No, partially.
Contract managers?
Partially, but they are the designers. Often they are the designers. They are the expertise, the functional expertise in these particular activities, so they'll have particular mainframe expertise, they have particular backup and redundancy.
Okay, so there's going to be a separate project to actually buy the equipment in that?
The equipment is sometimes included in this project, but much more often is separate activities. In fact, we have already purchased the overwhelming bulk of the equipment, and now these are the people who are going to help us install and implement.
So we have the equipment sitting in the warehouse, and we're ready to install
it. It's not sitting in the warehouse. It is ordered.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd be happy to move approval.
You're moving approval of item
13.
Sorry, 13?
Is it 16?
Yes, 13. Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And then I have item 14 and 15 as well.
Are you doing those together? Or?
Well, I can do them separately, but okay. the same, my questions will sort of apply to both of them. And actually, these are very, very difficult for me, Chief Taborn, because I understand the need, and we want our police officers to be the very best that they can be, and to be equipped to keep our system safe and even safer. So, but at the same time, we're still trying to balance that with the financial struggles that we have. So, this is a request for 22 sedans that will replace the current ones that have reached their mileage limit and for emergency sedans. So, what are your standards what are the mileage limit standards for emergency vehicles?
Well, the mileage number standards that we get from one, Metro has its own public policy 1.95, which is a policy based on the federal standards that talks about vehicle replacements in 6 years or 100,000 miles, but that just speaks to service vehicles. And if I can begin, we're not talking about emergency vehicles.
Okay.
We can thank the 39 federal, state, and local agencies in this whole Washington metropolitan area that assist the Metro Transit Police in times of emergency. Many of those law enforcement agencies come from the jurisdictions that you represent. But oftentimes, they do, too, have costs for services that they have to render assistance to within those respective jurisdictions. And one of our efforts is to provide customer service and response to calls for service in a reduced, timely manner. Just last week, we had one of our Metro Bus Enforcement Officers waiting for an hour and a half for transport in an area that was a little unruly. But because we have 10 sectors that represent the 1,500 square miles that these officers assigned to the mobile patrol, who primarily respond to stations or buses calls for service, we don't have that contingency of vehicles able to respond to the other calls for service for our other people who are assigned to Metro Bus Enforcement or other issues. So we want to give good quality service. We want to be cognizant of the fact that we want to provide safety for our police officers out on the street, and we know that we can't overburden the respective jurisdictions. So what we're asking for is just vehicles that we can do our job and reduce the response time and provide that type of customer service to our patrons.
Okay. I guess, so you said the standard is 6 years or 100,000 miles?
Just for a regular service vehicle.
For a regular
vehicle.
Service vehicle. Okay. And that sounds very reasonable to me. I guess, are we looking at that anew given the economy as well?
No, our vehicle is somewhat different from the jurisdictional agencies.
Okay.
We run our vehicles 24/7.
Okay.
We don't have a take-home vehicle,
okay.
So when one shift ends, the next person takes it on. And so in the course of 14 months, we may have a vehicle that has 60 to 70,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And that standard is consistent with your jurisdictional law enforcement agencies,
okay.
Many of which they'll have take-home vehicles, so they can get a longer life out of their vehicles than we can.
Okay, so this is for, you're replacing 22 sedans, and then you're getting 17 new vehicles.
15 new vehicles.
Oh, 15 new vehicles. And then you've got the additional vehicles from the grant.
Right, they are not a part of this.
Okay.
But yes, we will be getting those new vehicles. If you recall last year when the board afforded us the opportunity for 28 new police officers for special events, with that again comes requirements for transportation of equipment, things of that nature. And we don't want to take away from the rail and some of the other things by having those vehicles being taken up to take care of those people as well.
Okay. I guess what I'm saying, this came up in the committee before, and while we want you to be armed with everything that you need for your force for the protection of all of our customers, you're telling us that you actually need every last one of these vehicles.
Yes, and it was in our plan, in our budget, that we are not asking for anything that we had not necessarily planned for.
But not planned for, need.
Need, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Those are things that, if we want to deliver the quality of service that's expected, then we need those vehicles.
Hewlett, may I add to that?
Question.
Mr. Jean Cole,
Chief, the operating budget impact is no impact, yet we're adding vehicles and we're talking about maintenance for up to 6 years. Isn't that an impact on the operating budget?
Go ahead, sir.
If I may, we did have a discussion, and we're bidding the vehicles to include a maintenance package with them.
A 6-year maintenance package? Or just?
Well, the ongoing maintenance package, so there would not be an impact on Mr. Victoria, so we can have a maintenance contract so we don't sort of burden our own internal maintenance people with that. We can get the vehicles fixed.
But it'll be for the life of the vehicle?
Well, until we reach that mileage that we have to
sell. All that cost is built into this. Procurement.
Yes, for 100,000 miles.
So you're going to have, let me just repeat that. You're going to include in the capital procurement a maintenance contract for basically the life of the vehicle.
Right, the operational life of the vehicle, which is roughly 60 to 70,000 miles, depending upon and the age.
The other part of that is you're adding, and I heard you discussing this earlier, Chief, you were adding 15 vehicles so that you can get better response and get around where you are. And you say you operate 24/7, so that's 45 staff people to run the 15 vehicles?
Oh, roughly.
Are they included in your current staffing, or are these new people?
They are people that are currently in our staff.
So I've been trying to encourage you to get more people on the buses and rails, and you're going to put more people on the cars?
No. Some of those people, the example that I gave you relative to the Metro Bus Enforcement,
we have people that sort of cover the 1,500 different buses in the system. When we have an arrest there, it would be much more wise to have someone who could transport the arrested person as opposed to taking someone out of another sector that calls for services will stack up in that sector. If I had someone who's a part of the Metro Bus Enforcement who also operates one of those scout cars, that arrested person can be taken in a timely manner with little or no impact on a day-to-day patrols of our stations or other calls to services that come from our facilities and other buses.
But this is somebody who's riding the bus?
Yes.
So how's he going to get the car that he can use it to transport?
We have teams. We have teams of 2 to 3 people.
That doesn't work for me, Chief. But I'm ready to move on this one. If Ms. Hewlett is, you have your.
I have one more question
too. But it does leave me with a substantial concern that this sounds very much like we're going to be moving people out of being where they are visible to the public into cars where they're not really visible. Yeah, you see the car going around, but it's just another police car. What really is important is the people you have walking on the platforms, walking in the trains, riding in the buses, some with uniforms, some without uniforms. And this sounds like we're going in the other direction, which leaves me at least very nervous. Mr. Cato.
Mr. Chairman, even if you approve this, I know that's not the case. I like to bring back a deployment plan so you understand what we're doing with this. There has been an expansion in the police force over the last couple of years. And part of that, we did talk about the capital needs. So some of these vehicles will help with that. But it's not intended to take people off the bus, off the rail system. But we need to show you that. Because I don't want you having that thought that that's what the chief is doing. So we will bring back, I think, at the next operations report, some demonstration measure of how we're using the vehicles.
And also what we're doing to get more visibility on the trains and buses.
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Hewlett, do you want to continue?
Because on following up on that note, we just had the committee meeting, the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee meeting, where we had the crime statistics at the stations, and some are tremendous interest to me, even though our system is safe, and we heard that statistically the crime on metro property is significantly lower than elsewhere in the community, but there's still some stations that are experiencing more than others. So if we have these new vehicles and you have a deployment plan, I hope they're included in that.
Absolutely. And what we can do to show that the Metro Transit Police is not any different than any of the jurisdictional agencies with respect to their vehicles, with respect to what it is that they do on a daily basis to deliver good quality service to the constituents of those jurisdictions. What we're trying to do is to do the same here. Every time that there's a customer in need of service, that we reduce the response time, whether it's the delay of the train, we need to get to that point. Again, we call upon the jurisdictional agencies, but they look at Metro as having their own respective police department, and they too have things that they're responsive to. So we try to give good quality, fast service, and that's what we're trying to do.
And we don't doubt that, but thank you for elaborating. With that, did you make a motion, or I would be happy to?
No, why don't you move?
Okay, with that, I would be happy to move approval of item 14 and look forward to the deployment plan.
Do you want to include 15 or do you want to?
Well, 15, the light duty trucks. I mean, I'll go ahead and make the motion for 14 for the time being.
Okay, and would you mind adding to that, Ms. Hewlett, subject to presentation to the operations of the board and operations committee
of
the plan that shows that we are in fact increasing our presence on bus and rail, not decreasing it by doing this.
Okay. Consider that my motion.
Okay. Second. Is there a second to the motion?
Okay.
Been moved and seconded. Do you have anything else on this one, or do we vote?
Ms. Hewlett? That's it.
Okay. Just all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Do you wish to say anything about that, Mr. Zimmerman, or just leave it?
Your arguments were persuasive.
Okay. Certainly the concern of the board relative to where our police are visible and not visible and how we are using our forces has been transmitted clearly to the staff, I believe. Ms. Hewlett, the next one.
Okay, the same sort of our concerns apply to item 15, and I'd like for you to elaborate. Now, here we're talking about light-duty trucks, so I don't know if there's the same kind of need for these trucks versus the sedans in the previous item, and if you could help me understand
sure.
that, I appreciate it.
We have crime scene search evidence technicians that go out to every calls for service, whether they're in the rail or in any other facility. They have to bring the equipment that's necessary for them to do their respective jobs. We also have the new Office of Emergency Management who respond to scenes for incidents that they can render assistance as well. Again, we're not asking for any more than what we feel the constituents and the patrons and our employees deserve. I'll be the last person to ask for anything that I didn't think that there was value added or that people, my officers and members come to me with telling me why is it that they have to stand in a particular location for a long period of time without any backup. Why does it take people out of another sector only to wait for something to be delivered? And those are the things not only this police department, but your respective police departments deal with on a daily basis. And so we can give you a better picture of the demands, the deployment, the needs, and we can offer up ride-alongs to anybody, or we can listen to the radio on even any given evening to see the calls for services and how they're stacked up and we can't get to there in
okay.
a timely manner.
Okay, I'm gonna take you up on that ride-along.
Absolutely.
And number two, this increases the fleet just by, this one is not a big ticket, a huge ticket dollar amount, so it increases the fleet by two, right?
Yes.
Okay, and okay, and you said that you wouldn't bring anything to us that wasn't value added in terms of what you provide, and we don't doubt that either. I don't doubt that, and I'm sure my colleagues don't either. It's just that we just have to scrutinize these things more. We have to. It's not business as usual, is it? And that is why I have these questions. And I told you it was a little bit gut wrenching for us because we want you to be able to do a good job. We want our customers protected, but at the same time, we really had to assess how much was desire and how much was true need.
Okay.
Ms. Hewlett, wait a minute. Mr. Linton, and then the general manager.
Mr. Chief, I support all that you're trying to do to make our police department responsive to the needs of our constituents, but I would like to put some of your comments in context. The economic times that we face, value added is not necessarily a terminology that we can afford to use when people are actually trying to deal with survival. And budgets that jurisdictions as well as Metro will be facing is survival. I would love to be able to, in my own household budget, to add things that had value added. I had to make sure that I can pay the mortgage and make sure that lighting's on and make sure that we have a roof on the house. Value added would mean something beyond that. And yes, we have wait times and we have some other things, but we have police officers that are working versus police officers who are unemployed. So I think what the board is faced with, and particularly as we look through the out years, is trying to maintain what we have. The idea of adding value is something that we just may not be able to afford to do, and we may all have to suffer with that until things get better. So I think, state of art value added is probably not the best terminology. It needs to be really, this is a critical matter that we have to have. The metrics need to reflect that and what the consequences will be if we don't have. Versus value added. So I just want to put that in some context.
Mr. Cato.
I'm asking a point of clarification on the last item and this one too. I mentioned that I was bringing back to you deployment information, how we're using the people to demonstrate this is not pulling people off the rails and off of our buses and our rail system. And I believe that you amended or you added to the approved action that I would do that.
Yeah,
but for clarification purposes, this does not mean that we cannot move forward until I do that which comes first.
No. That means you cannot award until you've done that, and we have said, yeah, that makes sense.
So the reality is...
I don't have any problem with them moving ahead with starting that procurement process, but they shouldn't award until we've convinced ourselves that, in fact, the plan is not causing reduction of people dedicated to bus and rail.
Okay.
Are you going to award within the next 30 days?
For automobiles, it's a lot simpler. I think once you go out to bid, those bids come back pretty quick. I don't know how long we have to wait.
You know, let me say this, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I didn't take the motion actually to mean that. To be honest, I took the motion to mean that we did approve it, but that you would be bringing it back to us, bringing the deployment plan back to us anyway, and that you would be showing us that it's not taking officers off the street. We have accepted. I took it to mean we accepted your response, and that we would like to see it, and you have promised to show it to us, but that we have approved it. That's the way I took it.
Okay, let me then modify my statement to say,
okay, you know,
we will accept your statement that in fact this will not get in the way of expanding the number of people who will be deployed to bus and rail, and will in fact help in that, and that should the presentation not be convincing, we're going to then come back and want to talk with you about what you're doing. So you're going to have to consider that in your decision to move ahead.
Well, given that, I'm going to make sure that I'm convinced before we move ahead.
Okay. That's what I'm hoping, is that you're fully convinced and that you feel comfortable with the whole thing. Just following on what Mr. Linton said, those of us that were discussing many of these actions with the Maryland Department of Transportation people who are struggling with their own budgets, we're confronted with people who said, you know, we're cutting projects. We're taking things that are ongoing and stopping them. We are telling people that they can't replace anything unless it's to the point where it won't work anymore. We're telling them new projects can't be done. And we're sending money to Metro to expand what it's doing. Now, some of that expansion is well justified and very appropriate, but I do think we need to think about who is funding all of this stuff that we're doing and the kind of situation they find themselves in. Okay.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, that the discussion and the vote was limited to item 14. Item 15, I don't know where we stand on that just yet. The issue in terms of the economy still is the same as Mr. Linton articulated, but obviously we haven't voted on that.
So are you moving item 15?
I got you. Not at this time.
I think 14 we already moved, right?
Yeah. We already voted on 14.
15. Are you moving 15?
I didn't make that motion, no.
Right. Are you ready to move item 15? Okay, you are not offering to make that motion. Is anybody ready to move item 15? Okay, item 15 dies for lack of a motion. Item 16, this is another one where I was confused by what the plan of contracts said and what this one said. The plan of contracts was talking about Metro Channel and closed circuit television, and this one is about police radios.
Whatever the Metro Channel text is incorrect. This gives us for the fiber optic cable over which the MTPD officers speak on their push-to-talk radios. This particular request asks that for the final six underground segments where we have not yet reached the audio quality of clear speech with no or minimum repeats, right by...
That's fine, Ms. Peck. I am convinced that this is an appropriate thing to do. I would just note that this whole process has made it very clear to me that there is no way I could vote for a plan of contracts where all I get back as answers is, well, that was an error. Well, no, that's not quite the way it is. And no, those aren't the numbers. We're going to have to do a lot more work before I'm going to be willing to consider a plan of contracts. So I'm willing to move this item with the explanation that you gave and for the items that this is focused on.
And if I may say that I do not understand where the errors are occurring, because I know for my contract, for my contracts, we lay in the documentation that I tell you that hasn't changed. So I don't know how this is.
May I say something?
Certainly.
Just to make a clarification, and it's a broad one, would hopefully apply to this, but when we originally sent the plan of contracts to the board for review, it was in very broad categories. And as a result of hearing the board let us know that they wanted more specifics on that, we actually took that plan of contracts and actually broke out the very specific contract work that we were doing. As a result of that, it appears that we have category differences. And I'm saying that as a broad statement. And obviously, we are very cognizant that the board wants the details. Obviously, what you're seeing here provides a specific contract work that we intend to do. And when we send the plan of contracts in the future, we will have very specific language and contract language, not the broad categories that we started with. So that's the explanation.
We look forward to a substantially modified plan of contracts, which also shows what the operating impacts will be. I think you might find it instructive to see what the operating impacts of some of your projects may be.
Most definitely.
Okay, so I'm moving this item. Is there a second?
Second.
I think we already did that. It was moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We have only one more item left. It's number 29. And number 29, I think we did all the others.
Yep.
Right. Is 21 one of the ones we did not see?
21,
I think we did. Let me ask the secretary. Did we do, when we did the en masse, did we do 21? We did do 21 or did not?
That was included in the original motion.
In the 20, yes, 21 was included in the original, yes. So then the only other one we have is 29. On this one, it's my question, and I am very supportive of Acumen Enterprises. I think Walter Allen does a wonderful job. But it appears that this overall process is at about $2.7 million, and it's entirely for consulting, all SmartTrip, which is something on the order of 20 or more people that we are hiring to help us do the SmartTrip program, which just somehow seems like an awful lot of money and an awful lot of people for that program above and beyond our internal staff. So how many people is this, and why do we need so many people, or why are these people so incredibly expensive?
If I can try to address that. First of all, all the support that we're going to be getting from these consultants is for areas and skill sets that we don't have currently, and that we only need, similar to what Ms. Peck has said with her projects, for a very limited period of time. These specific groups of the support we're going to be getting is, for instance, examples would be tracking the very complex and very, very numerous tasks associated with the schedule. We are also getting people who can help us test hardware and software releases, documenting those testing procedures, and also helping us with configuring the compact point to sale devices that are out in the region. We just simply don't have those people or enough of those types of engineering or those other skill sets that we need for this project. I think as many, at least we've talked about it in the past, internally and with some of the smaller groups, this is a very, very complex migration project. There are very many facets to this project, and without it, without this consulting help, without this assistance, we will not, we have a very high risk of not meeting our project deadlines.
And which project deadlines is it that, I mean, give me an example of what it is that is so complex and which deadlines you're afraid you won't meet and that you need this for.
The deadline is the IRS mandate.
That's this year.
That's this year.
You're not going to get this approach for this year.
I'm sorry?
That's the end of this year.
At the end of this year, yes.
You better be done already. Okay. Anything else?
Just the other project. I mean, no. I
just have trouble trying to figure out whether this is just incredibly expensive people or high overhead or an awful lot of people for what doesn't seem to be as extensive a project as fits in my head. So I don't understand what we're doing here.
I can tell you with the Acumen contract, for sure, we had gone out on a competitive procurement, and these were the rates that we were that were evaluated, and I'm not saying that necessarily they were the lowest or the highest, but they were the rank the overall best for this project.
And you're saying, and how much was the base year for Acumen? This is option year one, right?
Yes. I'm sorry, I don't have that exact number in front of me, but I believe it was like a little over a million.
Now we want to add 1.7 million,
which is
essentially doubling what they've already got for option year one.
For option year one. There is a six-month extension to that that we are not bringing forward right now, and neither do I believe that we will need that.
And then we have another $1 million for on-call engineering support.
That is correct. That's for additional support that is not currently available through the Acumen contract.
So this is Acumen hiring additional people or us hiring additional people?
No, this is through contracts. We aren't
correct.
Hiring anybody. Correct.
May I just say that I don't feel comfortable with what's going on here. If you could give me a number of people that are doing this and what kinds of things they're doing, you've given some broad statements. But it seems like an awful lot of money for what it is that we're trying to do.
I'm sorry, I do not have the number of people with me. I don't know what the number is right now. I can certainly get that to you. But
the Technology Review Committee has discussed this to some extent. Mr. Gene Kohler, do you want to talk
about that? Yeah, I would imagine the consultant has probably provided you a program analysis of how they would provide this service, and maybe we just need to see that.
Actually, we can show you that, and we can also, we don't actually, it doesn't have, it's by scope of work, and it's by deliverable, so we have, it can be by FTE, not necessarily by a full-time equivalent or by hours of service, and we can give you a one-pager that lists the actual technical scopes and the actual technical requirements and the deliverables that they're providing us. We can provide that to the TRC, or we provide that to the board in general.
Which do you prefer, Mr. Giancola, board or the TRC? Okay. Mr. Giancola suggests that you provide all that information to the board so that we can look at it. Is there any reason why we couldn't postpone this until we receive that information?
Yes, I actually believe the Acumen contract expires October 1st, which is why we're bringing it forward today so we can exercise the option.
What is the desire of the board here? For those members of the board that are left at 3 o'clock. Okay, with great trepidation, I move this project, this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Giancola seconds. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That leaves, I think that we've dealt with all of them. That leaves the reports. Are there any reports from any of the jurisdictions? There are none. Do we need a motion for executive session? Is there a legal issue that we do have to deal with?
It can be delayed.
It can be delayed. So we will dispense with the executive session. Then if there are no other items to come before the board, the 1,344th extensive meeting of the board is adjourned.